What Women Must Know with Sheryl Selman, Mondays at 2 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Everyone, and this is Dr. Sheryl Selman welcoming you to What Women Must Know, and a show dedicated to supporting women getting in-depth and truthful information so they can be empowered to make the most appropriate choices and decisions for their health and well-being. And as always, it's so great being here with you today. I have a few announcements to begin with. First of all, I will be lecturing in New York City at the Natural Gourmet School on November 19th, that's Saturday, between 2 and 5. It's a great afternoon. I have all sorts of fantastic information and samples and opportunities to dialogue with everyone to really enable women to get to the bottom line, what's really going on with their hormones, with their health. Kind of cutting to the chase and dispelling a lot of our myths and misinformation that unfortunately surround us in our culture. So I do invite you to come and join me. It's a fantastic afternoon, and it would be great to meet you in person. The other thing is that we are continuing with the wonderful series for the month of October, Natural Breast Health Awareness Month. How to prevent and heal breast cancer naturally. The best way to get this series of important conversations and interviews is to opt into my website, whatwomenmustknow.com, because every week I will be sending you the archive shows. So that's the easiest and most direct way so you don't miss out. The other option is you can go to my Facebook page, which is Facebook.com/whatwomenmustknow. Not only are all of these interviews posted there, but I post daily tips and information to support women in really getting the knowledge that will help them understand how to navigate, negotiate through this world in a healthy way. So that's a great website full of information. And I will be starting as of next week. I am initiating a series of in-depth interviews with leading practitioners, researchers, parents of women, of girls who have been given the Gardasil vaccine. This is really a series about the Gardasil story, what you really must know, what the truth is about this vaccine. This vaccine has just been allowed, I guess you'd say mandated in California. Governor Jerry Brown has just signed into law the fact that any young girl can request this vaccine without any of her parents' permissions at all. And in Australia, throughout the entire country of Australia, the Gardasil vaccine is mandated. So every young girl and soon every young boy will be vaccinated with this HPV vaccine. It's not a cervical cancer vaccine at all. Well, if you really want to know what's going on and the dangers and the reasons why you really do not want to be giving your child or allowing your grandchildren to have this vaccine, this is the series you want to be listening to. So that, again, will be sent to my list. Just go to whatwomenmustknow.com and you will be informed of this important topic. It's quite shocking, actually, as I've been doing these interviews with people all over the world. It really is quite an eye-opener. And if it was an eye-opener for me, it's going to be a bigger eye-opener for everyone else listening. So you don't want to miss out. This is the kind of information that we do not have easy access to, other than the listeners of this network, where we really have the vehicle to share. important information, but otherwise it's really hard getting the truth these days. So I hope you'll all be signing up and eager to receive that 6-part series. It actually may even go longer. Great information. So we are talking about Breast Health Awareness Month. This is what I've been calling this month's worth of radio interviews, fantastic interviews with leading voices in the field, empowering everyone, not just women, to make the choices regarding your health, how to understand the challenge of breast health, and what are effective natural ways to prevent and, if appropriate, to even treat breast cancer. So today we have a woman who is just such a an icon in the field of women's health. I'm talking about Susan Weed, the voice of the wise woman tradition, and she is one of the founding grandmothers of the herbal renaissance. Her 4 previous best-selling titles include New Menopause Years, The Wise Woman Way, Breast Cancer, Breast Health, The Wise Woman Way, Healing Wise, The Second Wise Woman Herbal, and Wise Woman Herbal for the Childbearing Years. And by the way, her latest book that's just come out is called Down There, Sexual and Reproductive Health, The Wise Woman Way. So Susan offers tremendous information throughout the world. She has a correspondence she has many correspondence programs actually, online education through the Wise Woman University and shamanic apprenticeships. She has taught at Yale Nurse Midwifery School, American College of Nurse Midwives, the Steer Naturopathic College, Rocky Mountain Center for Botanical Studies, American Botanical Council, Wegdermit in Berlin, and Waikato College of Herbal Studies in New Zealand. She has a lively award-winning website at www.susan, that's S-U-S-N, weed.com, where readers can find articles, health tips, how-to videos and podcasts, and recipes for herbal remedies. So it's my great pleasure to welcome you, Susan, to the show today.
And it is my enormous pleasure and honor to be with you, Cheryl. Green blessings.
Well, thank you. Well, we have a really important topic. Your book that you wrote, I'm not sure how long ago, I do have a copy of it here, and it's been in my library for a while, Breast Health, it's Breast Cancer, question mark?
Breast Cancer, breast question mark,
yeah. The Wise Woman Way.
And I cannot tell you how my heart leaps up when I hear you declare, as I have been doing for since this book came out, which is more than a decade now, that October is Breast Health Awareness Month.
I know. We have to shift the paradigm, don't we?
We truly, truly do. And I have certainly, as any woman does, friends who have danced with breast cancer. I'm not unaware of that. But even those women who are dancing with breast cancer are seeking breast health, aren't they?
We all are seeking breast health. And, you know, breast cancer is growing in men, and this is not often talked about, but this is a trend that's emerging, breast cancer in men. So
I've met men with breast cancer. I met an 11-year-old girl with breast cancer. I met a 32-year-old woman who grew up on an organic farm and has never eaten anything but organic food her entire life with breast cancer.
Yes, isn't that shocking? You know, when I was doing a lot of traveling, I would meet all these young women under the age of 30. There are 20-year-olds and 30-year-olds, sometimes teenagers. And I wrote a book called What Women Must Know to Protect Their Daughters from Breast Cancer because I was horrified at these young, young women who are being diagnosed, because we know the younger you are diagnosed, the more aggressive the breast cancer tends to be and the worse the prognosis. So this was such an awakening for me to see this happening, and I wrote my second book all about, at least from the research I was able to access and the women I talked to, what's going on, and then, of course, practical steps to start getting us on a healthy path.
We both sound like women who get angry and then do something about our anger. I was really angry at what was going on with mammograms and all of the really, you know, just to my mind, unhealthy treatments that were following the mammograms, and that's one of the reasons I wrote Breast Cancer Question Mark Breast Health Exclamation Point The Wise Woman Way. And the same thing for my new book down there, Sexual and Reproductive Health, The Wise Woman Way. I just got so furious at what is being done to women's cervixes. I can hardly wait to hear what you have to say about Gardasil. Thank you for going there.
Thank you.
You know, like people sent me a lot of stuff, and maybe some of it was true. But it was hard to tell. And so I feel like, you know, Cheryl, I really trust you to sift through the information for me and to tell me what I need to know.
Well, I've been doing some shocking interviews, and I have researchers out of Canada who've been investigating it. I've talked to a father out of Sydney, Australia, and what happened to his daughter and why he is such a major voice against Gardasil in Australia now. I've been talking to women who are campaigning against it in the UK. So it's been an interesting journey.
Many people
from many angles.
Have you found anybody who supports it?
Well, not in the camp I'm talking to.
I tell you what opened my heart to Gardasil, because I started out extremely skeptical about it, but you are aware of problems with DES daughters and sons and DES granddaughters, and we think it might even be going into yet another generation. And these women, especially when they're young, can get some very rare forms of vaginal cancer, which often just slide by our supposed preventative services. And the truth of the matter is that Gardasil vaccine, although it may have some downsides, I'm not arguing that, for these particular women, the risk is probably worth it, because whenever we're working with any kind of medical thing, we always have to look at a risk-to-benefit ratio.
Well,
and I think that what we want to avoid is we want to avoid mandating and saying everybody has to do this. But we want a life where there's choices, and we want both you and I to give women the information they need to make the best choices. And as I began to realize that there were a few, maybe small and maybe not so small, groups of women, and, you know, you're right. It's not a cervical cancer vaccine. It's a vaccine against cancer-causing strains of human papillomavirus, which are just as happy to colonize the throat and the anus as they are the cervix. And unfortunately, one of the consequences of the sex education that was given to quite a few younger people in the United States led them to believe that oral contact with genitals was not sex and was safe. And the rates of throat cancer, which does not have a simple test like a pap test, are skyrocketing. And the rates of anal cancer in receiving gay men here in the United States equal the rates of cervical cancer of a woman in India.
I know, they're shocking statistics, and I think that's why your work is so important, Susan, because you're offering people the knowledge to help support their health and to really take responsibility and find safe ways.
Yeah.
You know, when we're talking about the issue of breast health, I think that's another area that women don't have much education about, just what's going on with their breasts, why they're so susceptible to problems. And I thought maybe the first place to begin in our conversation today is to help women understand more about the anatomical structure called our breasts. What's going on with our breast tissue? What is it expressing when we have breast issues, whether it's cysts or you know, a painful breast, and what makes our breast so vulnerable to conditions like breast cancer?
Ovulation is what makes our breasts vulnerable to breast cancer. Now, breast cancer is a multifocal event. In other words, it's not like there's one cause, and you get rid of that one cause, and you've gotten rid of breast cancer. That's why it's so slippery. There's hundreds and hundreds of things that often have to join forces together in order to get that breast cancer to grow. But ovulation is one of the main things. Now, I certainly would not want to be this woman, but this is an actual woman. She lives in India, and she just gave birth some years ago, maybe 4 or 5 years ago now, to her last child. I think she was just past the age of 60, 61 or 62. And she was married when she was 14, and she has never menstruated. She's been pregnant or lactating, and she doesn't actually have that many children because her nutritional status is fairly poor, and so nursing was very good birth control for her. I say to American women, woohoo, you have very high-quality diet. Do not trust nursing to be birth control for you. Maybe you'll get 2 months, maybe three out of it, but after that, you better be protecting if you don't want to have another baby right on the heels of that one. But for her, nursing for 3 or 4 years actually was an effective birth control for her. So what this means is that she only ovulated about 15, 16 times in her entire life. And ovulation and the hormonal cascade that precipitates and then follows ovulation causes progesterone to be produced. And pro means for, gestation is gestation. Progestation, for gestation, that means build up the breasts, make them bigger. Build up the endometrium, the lining of the uterus, and make it bigger. And then if we're not pregnant, we have to get rid of that. Well, every time we make the breasts bigger and replicate cells in the breasts, we have created a situation in which if there are other things going on, breast cancer can start in those breasts. So the constant push and pull of ovulation, not pregnant, was, in my research, the biggest single cause for breast cancer. Surprisingly, then, if a woman has a child before the age of 20, she's almost immune to breast cancer until after menopause because the progesterone in her body during the menstrual cycle no longer triggers breast growth because her body is now locked in on and understands what breast cancer, what pregnancy is. And so it doesn't have to get the breasts big unless there's an actual pregnancy. One of the kind of modern things is that women are deferring childbearing until their mid-30s, even to mid-40s. And so they've had many, many ovulatory cycles. And this sets up this constant possibility. Now, at least I leave you feeling, about this. Let me tell you what I do. Every week, I drink a quart of red clover infusion. I'm sure you've heard about red clover, and you know about red clover, yes.
Right, but tell us, but tell our audience why? What is it about red clover, and why
what
do you
is
drink
it? About
it? Who should
clover?
Be drinking it?
Everybody, every single person, man and woman, as far as I'm concerned, should be drinking at least a quart of red clover infusion every week. There are YouTubes. You can just put in red clover, Susan Weed, in YouTubes, and you can find a YouTube of me making a red clover infusion and talking about it. And I think there's also one of us harvesting and drying the red clover in case you want to do that yourself. But there's wonderful, lovely organic red clover for sale. And red clover is a plant that has not just one phytoestrogen like soy, which actually can promote breast cancer, but all four naturally occurring phytoestrogens. And these four work in concert to actually prevent any cancer cells from absorbing estrogen. I find that a lot of people think that estrogen is just one thing, when of course estrogen is actually hundreds of different things. Tamoxifen is estrogen. It's a kind of estrogen that blocks cancer's ability to absorb estrogen. And so I often say that red clover is like a natural tamoxifen without the side effects. As a matter of fact, red clover is primarily grown throughout the world to feed to pregnant and lactating cows. It's one of the world's great fertility herbs as well. So you do have to watch out for that. But red clover is the world's leading cancer preventative and cancer curative herb, especially in water-based infusion, which is 1 full ounce of dried herb in a quart jar, filled to the top with boiling water, tight lid put on that, allowed to steep 4 hours or overnight, strained, refrigerated, and drunk, hot or cold.
Well, so that is such an easy I mean, an easy infusion to make if people just need to get some good organic red clover. So you're saying it is natural plant-based types of estrogens that are not as stimulating as estrogens we find in the environment or even that our bodies may be making. So they have estrogenic properties, but not overstimulating, and then the body will receive those, the receptors pick those up rather than other environmental estrogens, for instance?
Yes. They're actually considered to be like three groups of estrogens. The estrogens that we make in our bodies, the xenoestrogens, that's the estrogens in the environment, and the phytoestrogens, the estrogen-like substances found in plants. Now, it's pretty obvious to any of us, if we stop and think about it, that plants wouldn't make estrogen. They're not mammals, so they don't really need it. So they actually contain phytosterols. And these sterols, if you think steroids, you're on the right track. These phytosterols can be converted by fermentation in the gut into active estrogens in the body. We women start making 29 kinds of estrogen in utero. At about the 20th week of gestation, we actually start making what's called baseline estrogen. It's 29 estrogens, and we make them every single day of our lives. There's no day between, you know, half-baked, shall we say, until the day we die when we're not making estrogen.
Right. Right.
The 30th estrogen that human women make is estradiol or estradiol. We start making it at puberty, and we stop making it at menopause. And estradiol is to breast cancer as kerosene is to fire. Kerosene doesn't cause fire, but if you have a spark, that kerosene will make it explode. Just so. Estradiol doesn't actually cause breast cancer, but it feeds it. And the setup in the human body is that we have these 29 kinds of estrogen that don't feed cancer, that can actually block the detrimental effects of estradiol. Now, the statistics may have changed slightly, but I think they're still roughly the same. The risk of a 20-year-old white woman getting breast cancer in the U.S. today is about 1 in 20,000. The risk of a 40-year-old white woman is about 1 in 400. And the risk of a 50-year-old white woman is about 1 in 50. So we might ask ourselves, what would a smart woman do between the ages of 40 and 50? And that would be stop making estradiol.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the primary reason for menopause, is so that we can live another 50 years healthily and protected against the breast cancer-causing effects of estradiol, which, as you already told us, the younger a woman is when she's diagnosed, the more aggressive that cancer is going to be because she's more, shall we say, in the flush of her fertility and producing more estradiol.
Mm. So red clover infusion.
Red clover infusion?
A quart
a week?
Week.
Or 2 quarts a week if you're feeling particularly vulnerable. And lentils. I love lentils. There's so many kinds of lentils. There's the little orange quick-cooking lentils. Don't think of them as taking a long time. Orange lentils cook in 20 minutes.
Right.
There's a nice French, the Pouilly lentils. They're black. Oh, they're very sophisticated. They also can cook up kind of in medium time, like 40, 45 minutes. And then there's the usual big brown soup lentils that you're used to. But lentils contain a repair kit. Not only do they contain the four phytoestrogens we're talking about, but they also contain a repair kit for the DNA. And so when you eat lentils and there's cancer cells, then your immune system can go to those cancer cells, repair the damage in the DNA, which is what a cancer cell is a cell with damaged DNA, and that cancer cell becomes a normal cell.
Right, and that's such an inexpensive food as well.
Exactly. Neither one of these things is difficult to do, nasty in taste, or terribly expensive.
Right.
They're easy ways for women to protect themselves. And mammograms don't protect you. And I think that's something that both you and I are saying here in October, is the whole idea behind October being Breast Cancer Awareness Month was Eastman Kodak selling the idea of mammograms. The Preventative Services Task Force of the United States has told us that mammograms are worse than useless. They actually lead to maltreatment. The head of the entire mammography radiation for all of England quit in disgust because of the overtreatment and maltreatment that mammograms were causing women. There's a lot of things we can do to keep our breasts healthy. I'm all for keeping our breasts healthy and for doing real preventative medicine, but mammograms, although they're great diagnostic tools, are not preventative medicine, as far as I'm concerned.
Exactly. I absolutely agree. And we actually did a show talking about all of this because it's an important distinction women need to understand and also appreciate that there are serious risks involved with getting mammograms, and especially for the younger women who have thicker breasts and have, which they're recommending. I mean, I've met women as young as 26 that have been recommended to have regular mammograms because of the fear of breast cancer.
You know, when I was doing research for breast cancer breast health exclamation point, the wise woman way, I wanted to know how much radiation was in a mammogram. And I kept getting these kind of funny answers like, oh, it's like being on an airplane, or, oh, it's like living in the mountains. And I really had to do some serious searching to find that if you live 1 week in Denver, Colorado, you will get 1 millirad of radiation.
Right.
So there's, 52 weeks in a year? So 1 year would be 52 millirads. A jet flight of 6 hours will give you 5 millirads of radiation. A chest x-ray, which is usually done from the back, is 16 millirads, and only 1 millirad reaches the breast tissue. The smallest possible dose from a screening mammogram done with the best possible equipment calibrated immediately before the mammogram is 340 millirads.
Right. That's for one, just one.
That's for one, and there's usually two per breast.
At least, yes.
In fact, if a woman were to get a mammogram, that means, and that's, as we're saying, it's actually a series of 4 mammograms every year between the ages of 40 and 60. Her breast tissue would have absorbed more radiation than a woman standing epicenter in Hiroshima.
Yeah, and put it that way, it really brings home the point of how serious the exposure is to radiation. And that's if they aren't brought back because they, you know, have had some false readings and then they needed to come back and get it again, which happens quite often.
Quite often. And as I said, this is the lowest estimate.
Yeah. Yeah, that's if it's calibrated properly.
That's if it's calibrated properly and right before the mammogram. And you and I, unfortunately, know how rarely that is done.
Right. You know, Susan, we need to take a break, and when we come back, we have so much more that I want to talk to you about and questions I want to ask you of how women
can be
taking care of their breasts.
We're going to be bringing women more news about herbal medicine, which is people's medicine.
That's it. So don't go away, anyone. Stay tuned. You are listening to What Women Must Know. My special guest today is Susan Weed, and we'll be right back. Hello, everyone, and welcome back. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. You are listening to What Women Must Know, and today we have Susan Weed with us. Susan Weed is the voice of the wise woman tradition. She is a renowned herbalist, and as always, there's so much wisdom that we are receiving from her today on the show. So I'm glad you are joining me. We're talking about natural ways to support our breast health. And Susan, you know, you talked about the benefit of red clover infusion. What are some of the other suggestions you have for women as a way to keep their breast healthy? And then I want to ask you, what are some of your suggestions for those women who've had a diagnosis? What do they need to know so they can start helping their breast become healthy?
Well, we've already established that breast cancer is a multifocal event. In other words, we can't say, oh, just do this, like just eat organic food or just, you know, exercise well and it will prevent breast cancer. But we can set up what I call my anti-cancer lifestyle. And anti-cancer lifestyle, I'm not setting up the rigid set of rules for you to follow, but I call it a safe space. And I want you to fill it with your favorite ways of nourishing health and discouraging cancer. I mean, there's pretty easy things like we know that eating 4 servings of cabbage family plants per week reduces overall cancer risk by 50%.
Hmm.
Now we're talking a really large group of plants, including cabbage, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, cauliflower, bok choy, turnips, rutabagas. And it's really easy, you know, broccoli derape, to eat 4 servings of this in a week. My goodness. I'm eating, you know, 4 to 6 servings of vegetables a day. So I probably eat 10 servings from this family a week, but unfortunately, more doesn't do us any good at all. Miso and tamari. Real tamari, show you. Not Bragg's or any kind of non-fermented things, but real fermented soybeans have the most amazing anti-cancer abilities of any foods that we know of. They are on my table every day. Every day I'm doing my best to eat some tamari or some miso.
Can I jump in there, Susan? Shouldn't people be taking miso if they've had radiation, like a mammogram or whatever, to help deal with the free radical damage from exposure to that radiation?
I agree, and very much, and especially miso with seaweed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I was just going to say, you know, a miso soup, a traditional miso soup, which contains seaweed, miso, and small fish. And small fish are just wonderful sources of omega-3 fatty acids. Much better than capsules, to my mind. So there you have, you know, like a easy soup for lunch, and again, not very expensive, to be eaten to maintain health, or yes, if you've been dealing with radiation. I will tell you what my favorite thing for people who have chosen radiation to use is, and it's really kind of against the grain of what people are told, but the results are so fantastic. And that is the oil of Hypericum perforatum. This is sometimes called red oil or St. John's wort oil. Now, it prevents burns, so I like to call it St. Joan's wort oil because I figure that Joan knows a lot more about burning than John does.
Yeah.
And it is the most amazing sunscreen. You just absolutely, you know, aren't going to burn in the sun. And it not only protects the skin and the other tissues from damage by the radiation, it seems to actually somehow focus the radiation on the cancer. Now, we all know that they always say, don't put anything oily on your skin before the radiation treatment. So what I tell people to do is to rub this into the skin very, very well about an hour before your radiation treatment so that it's thoroughly absorbed, and don't say a word to your radiation oncologist until the end of your treatment, where they are then going to say to you, all right, you should tell me now what you've been doing, because we never see anybody come out of this with such healthy-looking skin. I had a friend diagnosed with inoperable lung cancer. They did over 50 radiation treatments to her upper chest. That skin is so thin there. Usually you come out looking like a piece of tanned horse hide. From that, her skin looked like a baby's skin. It was so beautiful. And indeed, her oncologist said, I haven't wanted to ask, but I've known that you've been doing some alternative thing. He said, so you might as well tell me, what is it, aloe? She said, no, I've been putting Hypericum oil. And he said, he nearly fainted. He said, because they think of oil as, you know, like basting a turkey. It's going to really make you burn. He said, but I can see the results right here. And I actually have radiation specialists who are calling me and thanking me for this advice.
That's wonderful advice, actually. And, you know, that's something women should be aware of, so they can do it before they go and get any sort of radiation,
whatever
that may be. Or whenever there's any exposure, certainly afterwards can put that oil. I gave that oil to my sister-in-law after she got terribly burned from radiation treatment. And
yes, it works
so
afterwards
healing.
As well as a healer.
Mm.
Did you find that it helped her heal?
Yes. Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's much better as a preventative.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, but, you know, if you're saying, ugh, I forgot to do it, well, then you can also come home and do it after the treatment.
Okay.
Right, because it really does help prevent deep tissue damage and therefore allow the radiation to do its work better. I also have found myself, especially in the past few years, really having to be very loud and very clear about the fact that there is no nutrition available from raw food. I find that there seems to be a lot of misinformation And again, you can find a YouTube called The Raw versus Cooked Debate, you know, which I did with the leading proponent of raw food.
You know, I just have to chime in here. I'm so happy to hear you say this, because I just see so much misinformation put out about raw food. In theory, it might look like it's beneficial, but in actuality, it can be very debilitating long term.
Yes, and not just long term. I had a 23-year-old apprentice who came to study with me, and she visited her mother before she came here. She had been eating raw food for, it was under a year, maybe 10 months. She looked so bad that her mother hauled her off to the doctor, and they did a bone scan on her. And at 23, she had the bone mass of an 80-year-old woman.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear.
Because you can't get nutrition from raw food. I hear people say, well, the largest land animals eat raw food. But I think, my goodness, do you understand that a 1,000-pound elephant has to eat 300 pounds of raw food a day just to maintain life?
And their digestive system is very different than ours,
totally
coping with the fiber.
Ours. Oh, my goodness. And their teeth and their jaws. I mean, we're just not designed for that. And also, I hear a lot of misinformation about dairy products and about animal products in general. Personally, I don't see women moving into their 60s and 70s with good health who have not been having dairy in their diet. I think good quality dairy, full-fat dairy, organic dairy is one of the keystones to an anti-cancer lifestyle.
Well, you must recommend a lot of goat's milk.
You know that I keep a herd of dairy goats.
No.
That is certainly what I choose for myself. And how nice that there is goat's milk on the market, and especially goat's milk cheeses. But even a regular commercial yogurt, even a quart a week is a powerful ally in reducing your cancer risk, not to even mention getting rid of two-thirds of your urinary tract infections before they even start, and 75% of your vaginal infections before they even start. The benefits of eating a quart of yogurt a week just go on and on.
But it really needs to be an organic form, not loaded with sugar or all the fruit.
Yeah. Plain yogurt. If you want to put some frozen fruit in it when you get it home, I've got nothing against that.
Yeah, do your own, but not
buy
it.
Do your own, buy it plain and full fat, because you need the fat to absorb the minerals.
Right, and that's something that people still don't really understand, the importance of those healthy fats for absorbing your fat-soluble minerals.
And why are we talking about minerals? We're not talking about bones. We're talking about breasts. Certainly bones and breasts. Yeah. Well, the immune system uses minerals. The immune system, in fact, uses more minerals than the bones do. And it's that constant replenishment of the minerals in the blood that keeps the immune system healthy and allows the immune system to find and deal with cancer cells in the body.
What do you recommend for liver support? Because that's such a major piece of
isn't it,
any chronic illness, but certainly if we're talking about cancer.
Well, I was just about to say, and I think that people misunderstand meat. Now, there's a lot of good advice out there that eat less red meat. Yes, eat less red meat, but the advice is not eat no red meat, because, in fact, the liver requires red meat in order to function well. We must have some red meat or blood if you're too poor to buy the meat.
Right.
You know, it was in the market in Valencia in Spain, and they're selling all kinds of stuff, most of which I recognize, and somebody is selling something that looks like really big blocks of dark red maroon jello. And I go up in my very halting Spanish and ask what it is, and he says, song.
Oh, right.
You know, I'm trying to pretend that I don't understand what he's saying.
Right.
But I know what he's saying. He's saying, this is blood. We're selling blood. And I think about it, you know, the poor people of the world, they can't afford the meat, so they buy the blood. They make blood soup. They make all kinds of things with it, because the liver needs heme.
Right.
It's a limiting nutrient. It's something we can't make, but we require.
And I always encourage women to do the red meat if they are not getting their menstrual cycles, if they're amenorrhea, which is not a healthy thing, of course.
Really?
And they are blood deficient.
Yes.
So meat is a great source. You know,
I'm not talking about processed meat here. I'm not saying, you know,
bologna.
Bacon for breakfast, bologna for lunch, you know, and a hamburger for dinner. That's not what I'm saying. You know, I'm saying maybe once a week.
Yeah.
Even something like as easy as chicken soup. And you know, I just really got into chicken soup because over the past 5 years, it seems like, you know, now that I'm past 65, more and more of my friends are dealing with cancer. And I felt like I kept going from house to house making chicken soup.
Right.
And just saying, you know, this is what you need. This is, give this to your liver. Now, certainly there's wonderful herbs, and dandelion says, me, I'm the liver herb, and you know what? I love your breasts, too. And anything made from dandelion really does have that dual action. I talk about that in my green book, Healing Wise, where we have Dr. Dandelion, and he says, I am a breast man, you know. And he is, Dr. Dandelion really helps the breast be healthy and helps the liver be healthy, brings up hydrochloric acid so that we don't have acid indigestion. Oh, my goodness, we could both go on and on and on about what's going on with the purple pills in America.
Exactly. So do you recommend it as an infusion? What's your favorite way to take dandelion, or just the greens, cook them up?
I call dandelion the generous plant. Any part of dandelion, prepared in any way and harvested any day of the year, will give you what you want. And that could be dandelion root dug up or bought as a tincture, or you could make your own vinegar, or you could throw it into soups, although it is a bit bitter, or you could dry it and make an infusion of it, or you could even roast it and make a coffee substitute, or the leaves. Now, when you buy dandelion leaves in the store, they're really chicory leaves, but that's okay, because chicory works the same as dandelion. And you could cook those dandelion leaves, or you can buy them dried and make an infusion. You can harvest your own and make a vinegar of them, or you could make dandelion flower wine. That's my favorite way of taking dandelion. And there's a recipe in my green book for making dandelion flower wine. You could make a dandelion flower fritters. There's also a recipe for that. Or dandelion flower honey, and there's a recipe for that. The only part of the dandelion that I've never heard of anybody using is the seeds. There's a Swiss herbalist that uses the flower stalk, and she just soaks the flower stalks in water and has people drink that.
Oh, how interesting. So anything about that plant is
just
beneficial for
just
the liver.
Any way you want to dance with dandelion. Dandelion is healthy, happy to join hands with you and to give you all the benefit that it can.
You know, Susan, I've been doing nutritional genomics, which I find really interesting because we're looking at certain genes, and particularly the detoxification genes, and I haven't found anybody that isn't compromised genetically, which means that their ability to detoxify from the place where their genes are giving the right instructions is impaired. So we need extra support, lots of extra support to help the proper detoxification of chemicals and our own hormones.
You know, I see that support in a somewhat different light. The scientific tradition measures and then fixes. The heroic tradition balances, detoxifies, and cleanses. And the wise woman tradition nourishes the wholeness of the unique individual. I think there are reasons for our genes, and that they are not immediately obvious to us. Like, we spent a long time trying to get rid of sickle cell anemia before we realized that in its proper place, it was actually very protective.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I like to do is to work through nourishing people and to trust that when there's plenty of nourishment and optimum nourishment, that then, however genetically we are put together, we are going to do that detoxification, because that's what the liver and the kidneys and the lungs and basically the entire body is designed to do, is to get rid of stuff that isn't me and that doesn't really add to me or my health. And for me, that nourishment comes from drinking nourishing herbal infusions. And those would include the red clover we talked about, mm-hmm. stinging nettle, mm-hmm. the energy of the earth, oat straw, which
helps us. Can we talk about stinging nettle a little bit?
Cause you
can. I know that's one of your favorite herbal
infusions. It is indeed. Because stinging nettle, well, it's, you know, basically, what can I say? Stinging nettle contains just about every vitamin. Not, of course, vitamin B12, which we have to get in from animal products, and every mineral known to be needed by human beings. It contains lavish amounts of proteins and the hundreds of phytonutrients that we can't even begin to tell you what they're doing. But what I can say is that most people if they start drinking nourishing herbal infusions, even as little as 4 quarts a week, so they could be, one woman did 2 quarts of nettle, 1/4 of oat straw, and 1/4 of red clover a week, and went from severe osteoporosis at the age of 62, where she was losing 1 inch of height a year, to a better bone mass, according to her scan, than she had when she was 40 in 2 years' time.
Yeah, wow.
So these minerals are uniquely absorbable and usable by the bones, the liver, the blood, the hormonal system, the immune system. We are very mineralized creatures. We need minerals and the protein, the enormous amounts of protein we can get. Now, I don't know if you agree with me, but I don't think there's an upper limit in human nutrition for protein. I see groups of people who are eating diets practically, you know, half protein and half fat, like the Inuit or the Maasai, whose diet is basically blood, milk, and meat. And they're doing great. They're really healthy, little cancer, little heart disease. But for most of us, we're not working hard enough to work off the fat and calories that come with those sources of protein. So these, what I call liquid sources of protein, actually start creating enormous health changes within 7 to 10 days of drinking the nourishing herbal infusions. You don't have to wait a long time.
So what about oat straw?
Yes, let me just say I'm so passionate about this that I offer a free course called Drink Your Way to Health with Nourishing Herbal Infusions. It's at my Wise Woman University. And just go there, look up Nourishing Herbal Infusions, and you can enroll. There's no cost now. There's no cost ever. I don't sell any herbs. I want to turn you on to what I consider the best idea I've ever had. And hundreds of thousands of people are telling me how incredibly turned around their health is drinking nourishing herbal infusions. Somebody just wrote in and said, I've been drinking infusions for 10 days, just had an appointment with my doctor, and he halved my diabetes medications.
See, I love that. I'm with you. I think, you know, nourishing is...
Nourishing, right?
Nourishing, yeah. The
so
body,
the oat straw, what can I say? Oat straw is the herb of longevity for the Ayurvedic tradition. They say if you want to live forever, drink oat straw. It tastes good. It's healthy for your heart. It's healthy for your bones. It's really powerful and calming to the nervous system. Deeply nourishing to the immune system. And my favorite comment about oat straw was from a woman in her 60s. And she said, you know, after menopause, down there, it was really dry. It was like a desert. Think sand dunes and camels. She said, then I got your book, New Menopausal Years, The Wise Woman Way, and I started reading about oat straw. I started drinking that oat straw. She said, right now, down there, it's an oasis with date palms and dancing girls.
So it helps those vaginal tissues to remain moist and functioning.
To maintain and regain health. That is the goal of the nourishing herbal infusions. And, you know, a woman turns 50 in the United States every minute. And so I figured that's a new dry vagina every minute out there. And all you have to do is go into a drugstore to see the ever-expanding shelf of products to help women deal with that. Drinking your nourishing herbal infusions will make sure that you have strong bones, healthy heart, freedom from cancer, and stay juicy for as long as you choose to live.
That's great. I mean, that's so simple, just 3 of those herbs, and obviously can't get any easier to make an infusion. So
very, very simple. And as I said, there's YouTubes of me making every one of these infusions. So just to go over again, I rotate through 5, stinging nettle, oat straw, red clover, comfrey leaf, and linden. Linden is used all over the world to help prevent colds and flus. It also can be curative of colds and flus, but its basic function, from the herbalist standpoint, is as an anti-inflammatory.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, I don't know if you agree with me, because I don't know you very well, but I'm going to guess that you agree with me that most of what we call disease is actually the end presentation of chronic inflammation.
I agree with you.
And so to be working with linden, which is safe enough for a premature infant, to be drinking 1/4 of linden a week, is to ensure that my body stays in a non-inflamed state so that these chronic problems don't creep up on me. And I think it's pretty obvious to people that joint problems and blood vessel disease are inflammation. And most people, after a little would say, yeah, I can see how senility and Alzheimer's are inflammation as well. Mm-hmm. But I go even further. I actually think cancer is a result of inflammation.
Mm-hmm. That's what they're showing. Yes.
And part of why I think this is that women who take non-steroidal anti-inflammatories because they have pain, who take them on a regular basis, have significantly less cancer.
Yeah.
So I'm not for having you go out and buy non-steroidal anti-inflammatories. They do have their drawbacks. Linden doesn't. You can drink linden freely. It's a delicious herb. I only use half an ounce of linden.
Uh-huh.
And there is the funniest YouTube of us harvesting linden. And we're at a big mall harvesting linden blossoms, and all of these people stop by and keep asking us. I'm not sure if it got on the YouTube, but one man was so impressed with what linden could do for him that he went back to his truck, got a saw, and sawed off an entire branch. We said, what are you doing? He said, I'm harvesting linden. You've convinced me. Very carefully picking the individual flowers.
Right? What about comfrey? Tell us the importance of comfrey.
Comfrey only makes the skin, the ligaments, the tendons, the bones, the brain, the respiratory passages, the digestive passages, and the reproductive passages strong and flexible. Other than that, it does nothing.
Oh my goodness.
I say that a bit tongue-in-cheek, because, you know, I didn't mention any of the viscera, right?
Right.
Usually when we're talking about things, we say it does this to the liver or this to the heart or this to the... Comfrey doesn't. It doesn't actually, like, have much effect on that. It's, in a way, comfrey's about what keeps us together.
Uh-huh.
You know, the inner linings, those mucous surface linings of the respiratory, digestive, and reproductive system, and then the outer lining, the skin, which is kind of our very inside and very outside, and it keeps those strong but flexible. And the scientific tradition defines health as absence of disease. The heroic tradition defines health as purity and balance. And the wise woman tradition defines health as flexibility.
Well, I really appreciate your wise woman knowledge, because it's really helping us to go back to some of those fundamental truths that they've been a part of traditions for so long, but we've lost them, and you're doing such amazing work. I mean, I'm inspired. I'm going to go out and get all these herbs and make infusions and drink them and get all the benefits, because it's so easy. And
it's so easy to do. And I was just at the American Herbal Guild conference, and practitioners were coming up to me and saying, I have half of my patients drinking your infusions, and they are all benefiting. And I winked at one of them, and I said, what about the other half? And she said, there's a stubborn ones. They won't do it yet.
Well, Susan, I just want to say we've come to the end of another fascinating conversation, and I don't want to leave until people know how to get to your website and take advantage of all the wonderful things you have up there. So why don't you just give my listeners the address to get onto your website right now.
Come and visit me at SusanWeed.com. I keep the sun in Susan, but my web mistress, my daughter, bought Susan Weed and Susan Weed. So spell it or misspell it, you'll get to SusanWeed.com. Or you can just go directly to the Wise Woman Bookshop.com. That's Wise Woman Bookshop.com. And there you'll see all of my books for sale. And you'll also see my course, Nourishing Herbal Infusions, Drink Your Way to Health. It's free. It's always going to be free. We're never going to charge you anything for it. And you can connect to the Wise Woman University. Remember, herbal medicine is people's medicine. I run an abundance-based business. I'm here to share with you.
Susan, as always, thank you so much for your wisdom. You're such a delight, and I just really, really appreciate the wonderful work you're doing.
And I really appreciate you, too.
Thank you. Well, I guess we've come to the end. We've been listening to Susan Weed share her wise women tradition
wisdom with us. It's been a fantastic show. I hope you will all take advantage of Susan's work. And this is Dr. Cheryl Selman. You are listening to What Women Must Know. And remember, always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.